I'm Mindy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Fall has arrived, and that means lots to do in the garden. Joining us to talk about the end of the garden season is horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. Good morning.
Good morning.
We hate to say end, but it is sort of new. We still have a couple of weeks till our regular frost date.
Well, we do, but, you know, it seems like it got chilly earlier this year.
I thought so, too.
Last Tuesday, I walked my dog sometime between 6 and 6:30 in the morning, and it was 39 degrees outside in Marston's Mills, and I was still wearing flip-flops. I'm going, wow, I have to do something differently. This morning when I walked the dogs, it was 40. And those, to me, speak of October
right,
yeah. rather than September. I mean, 50's not a problem. Yeah. Days are gorgeous in the 60s, which is my kind of temperature, but it was nippy.
Yeah, it's been nippier at night. It's been nice during the day, but yeah, you're right. Yeah. A little bit cold. The other thing that we haven't seen a lot of is rain. I was really happy when they talked about this rain we were supposed to get over the weekend, and we didn't get as much.
Yeah, we didn't get a whole lot.
Yeah, so everything's looking kind of dry. I'm thinking our trees and shrubs, we probably want to still be watering to get them
hydrated. We should still be watering the garden, particularly broadleafed evergreens. You don't want rhodies and azaleas and hollies and mountain andromeda and things like that going into winter dehydrated. Mm. So definitely your broadleafed evergreens, good deep soaking once a week. But in general, your perennials, mm-hmm. you know, your lawn, if you care about your lawn.
Lawn will come back.
It'll come back. You know, but things, if you go back to the beginning of August, rainfall's been scant. And every time they say we're going to get rain, it seems to go somewhere else. Although I was watching the storms on radar, and I was getting nothing, barely wetting the dust in Marston's Mills, and there was this big bright yellow and red spot over Brewster and the Lower Cape.
Yeah.
So I think
depends where you are.
It depends on where you are on the Cape. I think the Lower Cape maybe has gotten a bit more rain from thunderstorms. They go across the bay from Plymouth and then get the other end of the Cape. But it's dry in my yard.
I think Mother Nature gave us it all in June. It was 8 inches, a little over 8 inches.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. But yes, it is important to be watering everything still on a regular basis.
Do we do that up to frost?
Yes, actually, up until the ground freezes in the case of rhododendrons. Usually we get into a more regular rainfall pattern. November is usually damp.
Yeah.
But September can be dry, and August was definitely dry.
Yeah, and of course, because the rhododendrons have that shallow root system, but anything with a deeper root system is probably okay.
It's probably a little better off, exactly.
Right. If you have questions about your garden, give us a call, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. This is really, of course, a great time to sort of figure out where your holes are, what you want to do for next year. We were talking before we went on the air. We're both already looking at, okay, that's going to go. Got to divide that. And so it's a good time to walk around and kind of make an assessment.
It's a great time for assessing your garden. Maybe you've had a really successful year. And if you have, kudos to you. Maybe you've fallen a little bit behind on your plans, which is my case, a lot behind on my plans. And so I go around and say, well, I wanted to do this year. Now I really have to do this next year. And think about exactly what would look better in this spot. Maybe, you know, over the years, my yard has gotten more and more and more shaded. And so what was once full sun with a lot of my perennials is now too much shade. And frankly, they're not looking that good. So I need to think about either ways to get more sunlight into my gardens, which will involve some fairly serious chainsaw work. Or maybe changing over the composition of my gardens to those plants that tolerate a little more shade. So, it's and it's, you know, during the day, yesterday was gorgeous. Yeah. I mean, it was in the, I don't even know if it broke 60, but, you know, the sun was out. It felt like fall. It has this crispy smell to the air. One thing about the dryness, it may impact a bit of fall color. It's still too soon to tell. I know in my own yard, I have two trees, a Japanese katsura and a river birch, native river birch, both of which by the end of August had just a boatload of yellow leaves right. that were dropping. I'm going, my Lord, looks like I need to rake, and it's mm-hmm. only the end of August. So yeah. it told me that I hadn't been quite as on top of watering as I should
as
have
we
been.
Should. Yeah, for, now, for folks who haven't divided perennials before, for somebody who's new to that, let's say, you know, you've got some daylilies or hosta, what's the best way? You want to dig the whole plant up? Do you want to chop half of it? What's the best?
What I do, I have like an 8x10 foot tarp that I drag around. It's got a bunch of holes in it now, but I could probably get another year's worth of work out of it. And I drag it to an area where I have lots of plants that need dividing. And this is a perfect time to do it. And I dig up the whole clump. I have a short-handled perennial spade. Makes it very easy if you can actually sit there and dig them up or kneel and dig them up. Put the whole clump on the tarp and look at it and look at the number of growing points. And then I frankly use an ancient bread knife, but you could use any good serrated knife or a pruning saw. And for things like daylilies, for things like hostas, Shasta daisies, I just literally saw it into chunks and then replant what I want and give away the rest.
Yeah.
And the thing that's good about doing it right now is the ground is warm, you can still water, and we've got probably a good 6 to 8 weeks of root growth that a lot of plants can put out at this time. So it's a beautiful time to do this.
Well, the thing people might be looking at their bearded iris and saying, the Siberian is, why is there that dead spot in the middle?
Yes.
Because we have to every few years dig those up and divide them, or that happens.
Well, that's the same. I mentioned the Shasta daisies. It's the same. The crown seems to grow from the outside out. Mm-hmm. And so each year you get a bigger and bigger clump. But eventually the center is just sort of dead. Ornamental grasses do the same thing. Yep. So for things like that, you dig them up, cut them from the edge, and discard the dead middle. I usually just throw it in the compost. You know, and a word on ornamental grasses, if you are planning to divide your ornamental grasses, don't wait until they're ginormous, because you will either injure your back.
Need a bobcat.
Break your shovel handle. Need a backhoe or a bobcat. Mm-hmm. They are just beasts once they get large.
You know, we have some really large ones. I there's no way I could do them. My husband has to do them. But yeah, you're right. I mean, that is a huge job.
Yeah.
Huge job. But they're so beautiful.
Well, they are right now. They're at their peak.
Yeah. And I like to leave them, you know, a lot of people cut them down now. I like to leave them through the winter when the snow falls on them. They're so pretty.
I like to leave them until they're not pretty, which is usually about February.
Yeah, that's about right.
But yes, they're gorgeous.
Yeah. We're talking with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. If you have a garden question or perhaps a bug question for us, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. If you're in the garden centers or some of the stores now, you're seeing a lot of the spring bulbs on sale.
Yes.
And they say, but you can't plant everything right now, right? There are some things you can plant now, some things you should really wait a few more weeks.
You can plant tulips now. I like to wait until the ground actually cools off a bit to put most of my bulbs in. Sometimes if you put them in too early, you actually get a little bit of growth this fall, which you would rather not have. You want root growth, not top growth. And when the ground is still fairly warm, I checked my soil thermometer the other day, and it was about 63-64, which is, you know, pretty warm for root growth. So I usually, for most things, like to wait until mid to late October. In the case of daffodils, I've even planted them in November. You can really put them in almost any time until the ground begins to freeze. I would suggest never using bone meal.
It attracts all the
critters. It does. You get everybody
digging
them up.
Come over here, here's the buffet.
And the other thing is, you know, if you're planting in a bed where you could put something over the planting area like chicken wire, it helps to protect them. Last year I planted a huge bag of crocus in the lawn because I just wanted them to naturalize. And out of probably 30 crocus, I think I had five this spring because the squirrels dug them all up. Mm. And I saw it happening and just went, oh, no. Oh,
yeah,
no.
What kind of thing you can do? Those squirrels, they'll keep coming back.
Yes, they do.
Now, one of the things we mentioned, the naturalizing of the crocus, and daffodils will do the same thing. Mm-hmm. So you plant them and you end up with lots more than what you originally planted, which is always nice. Tulips, though, are a different story. Tulips, a lot of you kind of really have to dig them up, don't you?
Tulips, I think they're beautiful when they're in bloom. I certainly buy them at the grocery store in February and March just to get that feeling of spring in a bouquet on my dining room table. Tulips aren't reliably perennial here. Some of the species tulips will come back year after year, but most of your fancy tulips come back weekly at best. Mm. So I recommend if you really love tulips, plant fresh ones every year. You could dig them up.
What a pain in the neck.
But what a pain in the neck. So I would say fresh ones every year. Or look for those species that actually say they will perennialize.
Right. Nan from Brewster writes, love the garden show. I'm transplanting peonies, which bloom so well before I move them down to the Cape to a sunnier spot, and wondering specifics, what depth to plant, any compost or anything else that may encourage them to blossom.
This is a fabulous time to either A, plant new peonies, or B, dig up, divide, and transplant, or simply transplant existing peonies. Dig up the clump with your hose, wash off the dirt so you can clearly see where the eyes are. The eyes are the growing points. Peonies like a fairly rich soil, so yes, work in some compost, work in some organic matter. They do absolutely best with full sun. Mm-hmm. And the key is they also like a sweet soil, so maybe get either, if you want to be absolutely sure, take some soil to the extension service and get a pH test done, or work in a little bit of either wood ash or lime into the site where you're going to be planting them. And then let the soil settle for several days and plant them so that the eyes, the growing points, are no deeper than 2 inches.
Otherwise, they won't bloom.
Otherwise, they'll grow beautifully and they won't bloom. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's probably the most important point. They have to be no more than 2 inches. So 1.5 to 2 inches deep.
So if you've got a peonies that's been looking great with no blossoms, now's the time to go check that out. Maybe see where that, if that's planted too deep, and that will solve the problem.
See where it's planted too deep, or see, and this is, to be perfectly honest, this is the case with probably 3 out of the 5 peonies I have in my yard. They're now just getting too much shade. So I really need to dig them up. My problem is
where do you put them?
I'm running out of room. I have one that just got, a friend gave it to me years ago. I didn't have a place for it, so I heeled it in the aisle between two of my raised beds at home, and it's been there, I'm going to say, for 15 years now, and it's absolutely glorious, full sun.
Yeah.
Whereas the other ones that were planted at the same time now
not
have
so
more shade, not so much.
And Nan also says she planted 2 small panna coladas. Did I say that right? PANICULATAS. 2 years ago in a fairly sunny spot. They haven't bloomed at all. Any recommendations? Here, I'm going to hand that to you because I probably said that wrong.
Oh, paniculatas.
Okay.
Those
see?
Are hydrangea paniculata.
Oh, okay.
That is the white blooming hydrangea, cone-shaped flowers. Used to be called the PG hydrangea.
Oh, right. PGs. Okay, yeah.
Sure. PG is actually a cultivar. There are many, 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 many cultivars, particularly in the past, I'm going to say 5 or 6 years, there's just been an explosion. Again, full sun plant. Sometimes when you transplant things like woody plants, it takes them a couple of years of getting used to their new location before they start reliably blooming. So if it's in full sun and they haven't bloomed for a couple of years, I would be just be patient and see what happens next year. Because these bloom on a new wood, it doesn't matter
if you
trim them in spring. In fact, I cut mine way back in the spring because they get too big for the space allotted to them.
Right. All right, good.
So, good. Yeah, okay. Be patient.
You're listening to The Point, our final gardening segment of the season with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And Joan is calling from East Harwich. Hi, Joan.
Good morning, ladies. I have a question about my crepe myrtle. It needs pruning. When would be a good time to do it?
I'm so thrilled you have a crepe myrtle. This is one small tree, large shrub that I'd love to see more widely planted on the Cape. Most people think it's not hardy here, and some of the varieties will not do well, but there are newer varieties that are very hardy. It blooms on new wood. So if it needs trimming, I would go out sometime in March or early April and trim it however you would like it to be shaped. And it should once again put out all new growth and start blooming late August, early September for you.
Oh, good, because I was thinking about doing it now.
In general, a word on pruning woody plants in the fall. It can be done, but it's not actually the ideal time. Plants store a lot of their carbohydrates for the winter in their woody stems, so I like to leave the stems over the winter. Also, the response in a plant that causes the tissue to callus over where you prune it is really slowed down in fall and winter, so it's basically leaving an open cut.
Yeah. And you never know what kind of storms we're going to have and what branches might
break off.
And it's Joan, what color is your crepe myrtle?
It's a deep pink.
Oh, we have a pink one too with dark leaves. Are yours the dark leaves as well?
Yes.
Isn't it gorgeous?
It is.
So beautiful.
And the reason I need to prune it is when we actually did have some rain here a couple of weeks ago, it was in full bloom, and the branches were down over the path, and get to the backyard, I had to go out through the basement. I couldn't, unless I wanted to get down on my hands and knees and crawl under it.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Sounds like it's a really big one. Joan, thanks for the call. A lot of people look at that and say, what is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a good suggestion. People should look for that.
It's a great plant. I first saw it here on the Cape. There's one planted, I think, maybe that's Gifford Street.
Oh, over by Stop and Shop.
By the Stop and Shop. And when I first saw it, it was, I'm going to say, 12, 15 feet tall with a trunk that was probably 8 inches in diameter. It did winter kill, I think, in the winter of 2005, 2006, where it got really, really cold and stayed there. But it's all come back from the roots, and it's absolutely gorgeous. Yeah. Gorgeous, gorgeous.
All right, John's giving us a call from Wareham. Hi, John.
Hi. Good to talk to you.
You too.
Three quick questions.
Uh-huh.
I have two peach trees, which I planted last fall. They produced very nicely this summer, although I lost all of the peaches to some animals. Mm-hmm. I hadn't put any netting on it. But my question has to do with pruning and fertilization.
Okay.
When do I prune? When do I fertilize? Same thing with an apple tree that did not produce. When prune? When fertilize? I'll have a last question on strawberries.
Okay. When did the apple go in?
Last year.
Last
fall.
Is it just one apple tree?
One apple tree.
And is it a self-fruitful variety?
Is it a self-fruitful? I believe it is, if that's a good question.
Yeah, I would, look up your variety and see you may need a pollinator on that.
Oh, okay.
But if it's only been in the ground 1 year, frankly, I wouldn't expect it to start bearing for 2 or 3 years. So if it is self-fruitful, just be patient. In terms of pruning, most pruning on fruit trees is done sometime after the new year. Mm-hmm. Usually it's February and March in a commercial orchard. In a home orchard, it's when you feel like getting out there when it's cold in March or April. And the idea for both these trees is to prune to a central leader. You want it to have one strong trunk going up, and then space the branches sort of evenly around, evenly distributed around the main trunk. This lets light in, so when it does bear fruit, they all get light and ripen correctly. Fertilization also sometime in March or April. Right. I'm amazed you got peaches. That I think mm-hmm. that's fabulous. There are some really good fact sheets on backyard fruit at the Extension Service, on the Extension Service website. So you could go to capecodextension.org and look at their fruit fact sheets, and I think you'll find sure. lots of information on growing pretty much any kind of fruit you want.
Yeah, and you know, John, I have to tell you, I have a couple of apple trees myself, and what's really interesting about them is you'll have a bumper crop one year, the next year not so much. It's like every other year you have this really yeah. amazing crop of apples.
Okay, yeah. Okay. My one last question.
Sure.
I have Burpee strawberries. I planted them, I think maybe 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
I had a wonderful crop. They're supposed to be, I think they're supposed to produce for three seasons. I got two great crops. The second one was in July, and then they stopped producing. Was that because I didn't fertilize them, or is that just because I was asking for too much to have them after July?
Well, I'm growing. I wondered, do you know what the cultivar name was? Burpee's just the company, but was it like Tribute or TriStar or something like
with
that?
Everlast.
Everlasting, yeah. They bear sporadically throughout the season. You may, if you go out there, see a few at mm-hmm. this time of year, but the bigger crops are spring and summer. I'm growing one called Seascape, which
okay.
is a good variety. You get a bumper crop in June, sporadic berries over the summer, and right now I've got a bumper crop again.
Mm. Oh, okay.
So if you Google Seascape strawberries, you can order them by mail. I think Johnny's carried them for a few years. I had some blank spots in my strawberry bed, and they actually carried them as individual plants, potted plants, at Country Garden this year. Mm. So I filled in the blanks with purchased plants locally, and I'm picking strawberries enough for several bowls of cereal mm. every morning.
Lucky you. All right, John, good. Go ahead.
Should I be fertilizing them this time of year?
Not this time of year. Generally, I fertilize my strawberries after the first harvest, so mm-hmm. probably in late June, early July. And just any fertilizer that's labeled as good for fruit, mm-hmm. And do it according to label directions. Don't over-fertilize. Yeah.
John, thanks for the call. Great. Good luck with
Thank
that.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right, let's see. Janet in Wellfleet sent us an email. She says, I hate to return to iris, but they are a source of annual frustration for me. I just love them, but I can't get them to bloom to save my life. I've planted many bearded iris over the years. I've also dug them up, replanted them with the tubers exposed, divided them, relocated to sunnier spots, and I always get beautiful, healthy foliage, but no blooms. What am I doing wrong?
I wonder what you're using for fertilizer. It may be you're using a fertilizer that is too high in nitrogen, which will give you magnificent leaves and good fat tubers, but it does that at the expense of blossoming. Mm-hmm. Iris also prefer a slightly sweeter soil, basically full sun, well-drained soil, and a little bit of lime, and the tuber, the rhizomes actually, do like to be somewhat exposed, so planted at a very shallow depth.
Yeah. Janet, give it a try.
Give it a try.
And we'll see what happens in the spring, keeping our fingers crossed for you. Meg is calling from Wellfleet. Hi, Meg.
Oh, hi, Mindy. I love the show, and especially when Roberta's on.
Oh, thank you.
My question. I finally got brave last year after reading all the articles and listening to everybody and planted the fig tree into the garden.
Yay!
I put plenty of compost in, but of course, without thinking, the compost decomposed, and so the soil level on the fig is lower than the rest of the soil level. I know that there's certain trees, mimosa in particular, that you can actually build stuff up, and tomatoes, over the growing level. I'm wondering if I can do that to the fig.
So it's sort of in a shallow depression, is that
yes.
what you're saying? And does water collect there or does it drain well?
No, it drains perfectly fine.
Then I think you're probably okay.
And not add any soil to it?
Well, if your roots are exposed, you would want to cover up the roots.
No, they're not.
But I would say you're probably fine. Give it a good solid mulching for the winter and see what happens next spring. I'm so glad you called. We have someone here,
Jenny,
yeah, who has probably the largest fig tree on Cape Cod in her yard. And she brought in a bag of figs, which I've already munched on a couple.
Oh, they're delicious, aren't they?
Oh, they are wonderful. Yeah. I put my fig in the ground last year because I was tired of carrying it in and out of the basement. It did die to the ground over the winter, but now it's about 4 feet tall and it's got figs on it. I'm just hoping they ripen in time for me to eat them.
Yeah.
I have one other question, too.
Go ahead.
I have two crepe myrtles that I bought in North Carolina about 5 years ago.
Wonderful.
A pink one and a lilac one.
Ooh, sounds pretty.
The question's on the mimosa.
Mm-hmm.
I had transplanted mimosas from Springfield, where I used to live, to the Cape, and they eventually died. And I took everything into the extension service, and they told me that it was from a virus, and there was little or nothing that I could do about it. And I'm wondering if that's accurate.
Well, it was probably maybe not a virus, but there is a soil fungus, Verticillium wilt, that will attack mimosas. It actually attacked my tomatoes this year. You could try again in another location. I drive around the Cape and I see some mimosas that look absolutely gorgeous, and I see others that are straggling.
Mm.
I put one in a few years ago. I'm trying to remember the name of it. I want to say summer chocolate or something like that, that had purplish leaves. And so when they were in bloom with that hot pink flower against the purple leaves, it was, it was shocking.
Yeah.
and it died. And I think it was also verticillium. So
so in where you have that verticillium, it stays forever?
It's in the soil.
It's in the soil.
If it was verticillium, it may have been a virus. I find there are fewer viruses that attack our plants. There are some specific viruses that are known of, like roses get a lot of viruses.
Right.
But I do know that verticillium wilt is present and will attack mimosa. So if you'd really like one,
try a different spot.
Try a different spot.
Yeah. All right. Meg, thanks for the call. Good luck.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. John is calling from Orleans. Hi, John.
Hi. Thanks for being on the show. Okay, I got one main problem. My tomatoes, about 75% of them got chomped by some kind of apparently eating bug. I had to throw away 75% of the tomatoes. It never happened before. Was that because of the hot weather? And how can I control them?
What did the damage look like?
Well, as if some kind of perhaps a large worm or something just ate it, and they went through it fairly fast. I mean, in a couple of days they'd get half a tomato.
Did the foliage get eaten as well?
No foliage. No.
Okay. It probably wasn't a caterpillar then. My first thought was the tomato hornworm, which is a giant green caterpillar by the time anyone notices it. But it strips foliage, and it will also gnaw on the tomatoes. You may have had a four-legged critter doing that. I've had problems with chipmunks. I've had problems with squirrels.
Yeah.
And those are the kind that gnaw away at the green tomatoes as well as the ripe tomatoes.
Yeah, they got green tomatoes.
Yep.
They
yep.
never got ripe, as a matter
yep.
of fact.
Yeah. I suspect it was either a chipmunk, a vole, although generally voles don't climb. Chipmunks will climb up your tomato cages. Squirrels will do the same thing. How can you stop that from happening next year?
Fence it in, maybe?
I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe put a fence around it, John?
Possibly, yeah.
Sorry.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks
for the call. John is calling from Dennis. Hi, John.
Hi.
Good morning.
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
yes.
We can hear you.
Okay. I have a Rose of Sharon in my front yard, and my landlord came by and axed it with a chainsaw.
Oh, dear.
In full bloom about a month ago. And it still had a huge number, like 1,000 buds on it that hadn't bloomed. And I was wondering, it would appear that it would bloom until November, Thanksgiving or something.
Some of them stay in bloom for what seems to be a very, very long time. But, eventually the blossoms go by.
Right. Will it bloom next year, do you think, given the devastation?
Well, they're one of those plants that blooms on new wood. So,
there's a lot of new wood.
Yeah, you get a lot of new wood. It's a nice brand new bush now, smaller, more compact, I'm sure. And yes, it should bloom next summer.
Yeah, they took 50% of it off.
Wow. Was it getting way too big for its location?
Well, it was over 7 feet high.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, Vern Locks would love this because the Rose of Sharon attracts hummingbirds and all kinds of exotic birds.
Yeah.
And it's just a feasting tree for these birds. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's fun to watch.
Good nectar source. I've got a big seven sunflower that's in full bloom right now, and the hummingbirds, it's one of their last sources of nectar, I think, in my yard. So they're all over it.
Yeah.
They love it.
Yeah. Yep. John, thanks for the call.
Oh, wait. Oh, I've got one more question.
Okay, go ahead.
It's all about sex.
Okay.
I planted two hollies.
Yes.
Uh-huh. These two very expensive hollies, and I planted them in my front yard next to my front stoop. One of them thrived in identical conditions, and very carefully, you know, did everything right. One of them thrived, and the other one died. I went back to Hart's, and I said, "What's the deal?" And he said, they didn't know. So I went over to Agway, and Agway said, "Oh, it's the sex, because one of them has got to be male, and the other one's got to be female, or they won't live together."
I think it said won't bloom.
Well, that's not quite right, that you need male and female to bloom, but one of them may have been planted too deeply. It may have had impaired roots. Hard to say.
Yeah. John, thanks for the call. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about the end of the garden season with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number if you have a question for us. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Pat says she has an old oak tree that suffers from gall wasp problem.
Oh, yes.
She's been told that a deep root fertilizing would help. Or should she just wait and see how the tree is doing next spring?
This is a fairly serious problem that's developed on the Cape. It's a relatively new species of gall wasp. We've had gall wasps before, gouty oak gall, that cause very visible galls out on the twigs. This one just causes damage to the twigs itself, and you get a lot of dead tips hanging all over your oaks. Perhaps deep root feeding would strengthen the tree, but it won't do anything for the wasps that are there. My experience is, in some cases, this can be devastating to an oak tree, not the feeding, but the wasps, mm-hmm. and you lose so much of the tree, it's not worth having. And other times, they move on. It's never all the trees that are affected. It's usually one or two trees within a given particular area. And after about 4 years or so, the natural parasites and predators eventually catch up with the gall wasps and knock the population down. So I generally take a wait-and-see approach on it. The life cycle is very complicated. It's difficult to know when or if you should be having an arborist treat it. It's a difficult problem. Yeah. So no good answers, all unfortunately. Right.
Okay. Russell is giving us a call from Brewster. Hi, Russell.
Good morning. How you doing?
Good.
I have two questions. One I hope is a very quick answer, and then my second puzzling one. The first one is, when is the best time to cut back my Rose of Sharons? I heard the gentleman call just a minute ago.
Well, I like to recommend doing it in March or April. It blooms on new wood, so you can cut it back in late winter, early spring. It'll put out all new growth and should be in full bloom for you by mid to late summer.
Great. I heard you say it bloomed on new growth, and
yes.
I just wanted to double-check. My other question, I have a heath planted to the left of my front steps. I'm looking at it right now, and it is surrounded by some other heath and heather, which are doing beautifully, and this one has died, and it's the second one I've put in the same spot that has died. Any ideas?
Is it more shaded than the others?
No, they're all same location, same amount of sun.
And it's next to your steps?
It's about 2-3 feet from my steps.
Okay. Closer to the foundation?
No, farther away.
Okay. I would have the soil tested and see if the pH is maybe a little high in that area. Does it drain less well than...
I don't think so. These other heaths and heathers I have are within 2 feet. One is mm-hmm. almost growing on top of the one that's dead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Do you use salt on the steps in the winter?
No, I don't.
No. Huh. Good question, yeah. though. I like that. I would probably dig it up and check out the root system when I have something that's not performing.
That has the same spot.
You might want to take, send your soil up to UMass and have a complete soil analysis done. If you're just interested in pH, that can be done at the Extension Service in Barnstable. But if you want a full soil evaluation, you can send it up to UMass and they will do that.
Yeah.
It's
Russell,
a puzzle.
And Russell, if you have this soil sample done, let us know. We'd be curious to know what's happening there.
Okay. My other thought was to take that out and just dig a lot of the soil out around there and then try a third time. Should I do that or should I have the soil tested first?
I'd probably have the soil tested first. It's probably the cheaper option.
Yes, they're not very expensive,
I suppose.
And then that way you'll know what you're dealing with.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Russell, good luck.
Much.
Sure. Eileen is giving us a call from somewhere off Cape. Hi, Eileen.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Good. Where are you calling us from?
Well, I am calling you from my home in Townsend, Mass.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Wonderful.
Because we have a home in South Chatham, tiny place. But I listen to your station every day, and I'm a continuing supporter.
Oh, well,
little
thank
bit
you,
of
Eileen.
Money.
We appreciate it.
And I wouldn't listen to anything else. And I can't wait. This Saturday is the bird show?
The first Saturday of the month.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, anyway, my call, I have two questions. Uh-huh. We have a gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous Rose of Sharon in our backyard, a real tree. The trunk comes up about 8 inches or 10 inches, and then the tree was divided into two very big, round, stems.
Mm-hmm.
And it grows. We didn't realize it would come back if we trimmed it, so it's about 16 feet tall with gorgeous hundreds of blooms. We have to move it. Because we're putting on a real tiny addition, mm-hmm. and wouldn't you know, it's right in the way.
Oh, boy.
And I'm wondering, I'm guessing that if we had an arborist, it might survive if we did it that way? Or is it once it's gone, once you move it, it doesn't come back?
Well, you can move it, but that's a huge tree. You're going to have to cut it way, way back. And quite frankly, I do think you should probably have a professional come in there and do it for you.
Right.
That would ensure a better chance at success.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll definitely do the cut. Now, the cutting back, the construction's going to start sometime March, early April.
Yep.
So are we cutting it back now or cutting it back then?
I'd probably cut it back in February, early March.
Mm-hmm. All right. We have another small one in the yard, but it's very shaded. And it's really not grown very much, so mm-hmm. I guess this needs a whole lot of sun.
They want full sun.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Now, the second thing is we have five gigantic hydrangeas in front of the house. We've been there 17 years, and I don't know how long they were before that. But this year, in particular, we got probably 65 to 70% big, giant leaves and only 30% flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering what retarded the flower growth more than usual.
Had they been pruned this spring at all?
I cannot remember. We have a landscaper down at the house, and I don't remember if they did it in the spring or in the fall, to tell mm-hmm. you the truth.
Either time would have removed flower buds.
Oh.
Yep.
Okay.
They bloom on old wood, and they form their flower buds probably in August, early September. So if they're pruned after that in the fall or in the spring, the flower buds are being pruned off.
Oh, right. Well, the thing is, they're so big and so tall, and they're right in front of our living room window, the front windows. And they're just about peeking in the windows.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to have to go a year without flowers.
You'd either have to cut them back right after they bloom, when they still look beautiful, or move them.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing that'll happen this year. We had this wonderful contractor, and we had the house resided and a new roof. Well, what he did was he put this stake in front of them, went around with a rope, and then with each plant, and pulled them towards the stake. Well, it was like a picket fence stake, and pulled them away from the house. In two places, and I mean, what a great job to keep from being you know, people walking on them or... Right.
That's a nice contractor doing that for you, Eileen.
he's wonderful. He's from Falmouth.
Yeah. Well, Eileen, good luck with that. And like we said, you know, if you either move them or if you have to trim them back, you're going to have a year without some blooms.
That's right.
But thanks for the call. I got another hydrangea question here. Pat and Brewster says, my husband pruned our hydrangea bush this spring, leaving the buds, but it never bloomed. It isn't the lace hydrangea, but the common type. What do you recommend? Again, same kind of a thing.
Don't prune in spring.
Yeah.
You can't. I don't know if you... if you're pruning it back at all, the flower buds are pretty much at the top mm-hmm. of the plant, maybe in the leaf axils of the next set of leaves. But if you prune it beyond that, the only buds you're leaving are leaf buds.
Right. All right, Pat is calling from Dennis. Hi, Pat.
Hey, good morning, Mindy. Good morning, Roberta.
Good morning.
Hi. I'm one of the many gardeners that Roberta has educated and released in the world. But Roberta, I don't know, you're one of the only people I would say this to, but every time I see a cool bug, I think of you.
Oh, thank you.
I saw a caterpillar the other day, a little thing, was barely a little more than an inch long, and it was the color of raspberry sherbet.
Oh, wow.
I just kind of knocked it out of the way because I was picking some foliage, but...
What was it on?
It was actually on a mountain mint.
Interesting.
Which is not, you know, it's sort of a different...
Was it like a looper caterpillar? Did it hump up in the middle when it walked?
Yeah, it did, actually.
Yeah. Those are, if I can remember my taxonomy, possibly what they call a geometrid. Maybe not. I'm guessing
as long as it didn't sound an alarm to you that I should have immediately.
No, I've seen these, and sometimes they feed on flower blossoms. I've seen them on geraniums, and what they do is, I don't know if it's the pigments from the flowers or what, but they turn the same color as the flower. It's a very interesting phenomenon, but very cool.
Yeah.
The one they're on is actually the mountain mint. Actually has a very white flower. But.
Yes, I've seen it. It's very pretty.
Yeah. Okay.
Pat,
well,
thanks. Thanks for the call.
Can I have one more question?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
I don't need to test Roberta's memory, but you shared an allium with me a long time ago, and it's a very late blooming, like beginning of September, late August. Very, very light lavender. And I have divided and shared that so many times, but I still don't remember. Is there any chance you would remember a variety?
I think it's, if you Google Japanese anemone, I think that's what you might come up with. And mine died out because of too much shade. So if you want to share back, that'd be fabulous.
Not an anemone, Roberta, an allium.
An allium, that's what I meant, a Japanese allium.
I'd be happy to. Believe me, it's all doing that thing with the died out in the center that all of virus and that sort of thing too. So.
Yeah. The other thing it might be is, and I'm thinking this because now my memory bank is kicking in, it's an allium possibly called broad-leafed chives. It's not garlic chives, it's broad-leaf chives.
Yeah, I'll Google both of those and see, just because, like as I said, I've shared so much of it, and not to know the name of it is.
Yeah. Pat, stay on the line. Jenny's going to take your contact info, so hold on, Pat. Thanks for calling. You know, since Pat's mentioned this sharing, this is a good time to be thinking about, you know, a lot of us keep some seeds or, you know, as we're dividing our perennials. But the seed things, I did that with one of my favorite tomatoes last year. And of course, every seed I planted came up. So I,
absolutely,
of course, shared because that'd be too many tomatoes for me to plant in one garden. But that's a great way to share some of your favorites.
Particularly, the thing to keep in mind is if you want to save seeds from plants, you need to make sure that what you're collecting the seed from is what they call an open pollinated variety, not a hybrid. A hybrid has two different cultivars.
You as can plant the, it, but you won't
parents,
know what you're going to get. Yeah.
And just basic genetics, you know, it's a hybrid, so its genetic material is both of its parents, and whatever you plant will not be what you get. It will revert back. So heirloom or open pollinated plants are varieties that have been stabilized for years and years and years and will come true from seed. So that's probably the key. But it's a lot of fun to share plants.
And it's so great, too, when this, when your favorite plant, you put those seeds in and it comes back.
Absolutely.
Anju in North Falmouth says, every year my kale gets chomped, I believe, by a caterpillar.
Oh, yes.
I have a lot of oak trees on my property. Could it be related to the caterpillars that defoliate the trees? What can I do?
No, it's not related. There, we have two caterpillars that feed on all of the cabbage family. The common one that everyone's familiar with is the cabbage worm, that white butterfly mm-hmm. that is still flying. But one that people aren't that familiar with that in the past decade has really blossomed on the Cape, so to speak, particularly in the fall, is a caterpillar called the cross-striped cabbage worm. And it's a green worm with like little black horizontal lines across it. And it's particularly heavy in the fall. I've lost kale to it. So what I now do is I just continue to use spinosad every 7 to 10 days mm-hmm. in the fall, probably up until late October. Once frost sets in, these caterpillars are gone.
Yeah.
But you just need to keep your spraying going. Spinosad's very safe to use, and it will take care of the cross-striped cabbage worm, and you'll have lovely kale for kale soup.
What about storing bulbs? A lot of folks, we have our dahlias, cannas, different bulbs that we dig up in the fall. What's the best way to store them?
There are many, 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 many ways. I'm not sure what's the best. What I do, which may or may not be the best, I wait till frost, mm-hmm. Particularly for the dahlias. They're still blooming. Mm-hmm.
Looking gorgeous.
So enjoy them. Great for cut flowers. I wait till frost gets them, then I dig them up. And I spread them out on some newspaper. My back room is a mess. But anyway, I spread them out on newspaper and let them dry a bit and then get rid of most of the dirt. And then I wrap them up in newspaper and I store them in tubs in my basement. I have a very cold basement. It's about in the middle of winter. It's about 45 degrees. And I'm going to say probably 90% of them survive. I don't divide them in the fall. I wait till spring and then see the ones that are in need of division and pry them apart. You don't actually cut dahlia tubers.
You sort of tease them apart.
Yeah. My cannas, I grow them in tubs. They had been in the same tubs for almost 10 years. And so this spring I knocked them out and divided them and put them back in fresh soil. And they look gorgeous right now. And what I do is, again, I wait till frost and I cut them down to the soil line and just move the tubs into the basement.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing. I can't tell you how many elephant ears. I have a couple elephant ears and
huge.
Oh my gosh, they get enormous. Yeah. It's like, I'm giving elephant ears out left and right.
Yeah.
But that's another fun one. And I usually just pull them up, chop off the green and stick them in a tub in the basement. And most of them make it. I'm always surprised.
If you have a relatively cool basement, if it's like 55 or below, it's perfect for not only storing things like dahlias and cannas, but if you grow lots of onions, if you grow garlic, if you grow butternut squash or winter squash, it's almost like having a root cellar, because it's a fairly chilly temperature.
Right. We always are so sad when it's the last gardening show of the season, but you'll be back in the spring
with
more advice. In the meantime, we've got lots of garden cleanup to do and planting and dividing, and we'll see you in the spring, Roberta.
I'm looking forward to it.
Horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.